Good morning, everyone. This is Sunday, August 2nd, 2015. Welcome to our Sunday morning roundtable. The subject today is love. The Golden Text, Matthew 5. Blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy. Who would like to talk about that? Can anyone look up the word mercy? Or you did? Okay, we have two visitors to Plainfield, Shardy and Linda, today. Go ahead, Shardy.
Well, mercy is more than grace. It is offering almost, it's closer to forgiveness. But mercy offers to those who would seemingly not deserve mercy. That's what I found.
Thank you. Anybody else on mercy?
Yeah, in 1828 dictionary, it implies benevolence, tenderness, mildness, compassion. One of the quotes is, "The Lord is long-suffering and of great mercy, forgiving iniquity and transgression, and by no means clearing the guilty." That's the important part for me. That was Numbers 14:18.
Thank you. Very good and very important. Anyone else?
Sounds like mercy has more of the divine quality. I mean, so many times we focus on people that are good, loving people, but what about the divine nature? Now, the rain falls down and it falls on everyone, the just, unjust, deserving, undeserving, whatever. Everyone has a chance to get it. Everyone has a chance to get it together. So God is the one who is the judge, and he knows what he has in plan for his great plan. It is all good. He's the one who regulates it all, not us.
Thank you. And I found compassionate treatment of an adversary.
Anyone else? Where did this statement come from, blessed are the merciful? What is it?
Sermon on the Mount.
Yes. Sermon on the Mount. It's a beatitude. It is. It's a beatitude. Where else do we find this idea of forgiveness, this a well-known in the Bible?
Jesus on the cross.
Yes, that's true. But also,
Lord,
go ahead.
The Lord's Prayer.
Yes, thank you. Forgive us our debts as we forgive our debtors. So you can see it's a highly important point for us, and as I love what Bruce said, it is a divine quality to be able to forgive. We have talked sometimes about history, and in history, Winston Churchill, the great statesman, he was one who didn't believe after wartime that you should punish your enemies. And so, after World War I, what happened? Does anyone know?
We punished our enemies very overly severely.
Thank you.
And the Germans resented it hugely.
Well, and they also couldn't afford it.
It put them in a terrible position. Thank you, Fairley. I mean, Winston Churchill obviously wasn't listened to.
He recommended against it.
Yes. Zari, did you want to say anything? You are. We can't hear you. So, well, anyway, and because of that punishment, what did that lay the groundwork for?
Hitler.
Many who don't understand how he could have risen to power, well, that was part of it. He promised all kinds of things to a very hurting nation and in great economic straits and everything else. So this is a very important point about punishing your enemies. Also, it's often, I mean, what is your motive in it? Usually if it's vengeance and hate, there can be no good to that. Now, I can't say I remember a lot about Shakespeare, but I do remember in school studying The Merchant of Venice and the beautiful soliloquy by Portia, the Shylock, "The quality of mercy is not strained. It droppeth as a gentle rain from heaven upon the place beneath. It is twice blessed. It blesses him that gives and him that takes. It's mightiest in the mightiest. It becomes the throned monarch better than his crown. His scepter shows the force of temporal power, the attribute to awe and majesty, wherein doth sit the dread and fear of kings. But mercy is above this sceptered sway. It is enthroned in the hearts of kings. It is an attribute to God himself." It goes on, but it's very beautifully stated. So, in your heart, you can think about those who, perhaps if you ever felt that someone has done you wrong, have you completely forgiven them? You let it go. If you don't do that, who does it harm mostly?
Yourself.
Yourself. It harms yourself. An unforgiving heart, it rarely hurts the person that you're not forgiving, but it will harm yourself. It is, someone once likened it, and he was using the words bitterness or unforgiveness, but it's a cup of poison you prepare for someone else to drink, and then you end up drinking it. So, remember this. I think I've given a testimony about this, but I'll mention it again about happy people. The one characteristic in a poll that they gave is often given about what makes a person happy. But the one unique thing about a truly happy person was they were forgiving. They did not hold a grudge. They let it go. And when you think about it, could you truly be happy if you were unforgiving?
Yeah. There's no way.
No way.
Right.
In fact, I remember once somebody actually conducted an experiment where they had a bunch of people viewing a film, and it was designed to get them to feel retaliatory and angry. And then they actually tested their blood to see what the chemical composition was, and there was literally poison in there. They were poisoning themselves by taking on this sentiment and allowing it to get into them. It's poisonous.
Thank you. You know, in one of our roundtables a while ago, we took this up in Watches, Prayers, and Arguments, because Mrs. Eddy talks about poison a lot. Strychnine poisoning, arsenic poisoning, various causes for it. And it's all the carnal mind that would seem to cause it. It's a form of hell, and it's a hatred is a plague spot which spreads its virus. What?
It kills at last.
Yes. And that is in Mrs. Eddy's article, Love Your Enemies, which everyone should know forwards and backwards. And in it, she says, too, that, you know, God will take care of it. If there have been terribly unjust things done, the arrow will destroy itself. It will take care of itself. You don't have to go out seeking the vengeance. It will happen. It will happen because that's laws of the universe. You either obey or you don't. If you don't obey, you come out from under God's law of love, and that's not a good place to be.
There's another thing that really struck me. You know, in our watch message last night, it says, "No electricity of mortal mind." Well, electricity goes from the positive to the negative. So imagine somebody who maybe view something unjust in their view, and the next thing they feel retaliatory about it. Well, they got sucked into this electricity that goes to the negative. So who's going to be the brave one and stop this trend and go back to the mercy of God? You know, there was one time when I worked in an office and there's a postcard on the wall, and on it was written, "Love is a mighty spiritual force," signed by Mary Baker Eddy. And when I went to that office and looked at it, it left an impression on me.
Thank you. If there's nothing in you, animal magnetism or error won't be able to find you. It can only find you if you're unforgiving, if you're hateful, if you're resenting. It'll find you. So don't let it. That's why the statement reaction is the bridge over which animal magnetism crosses. If someone upsets you and you react, well, you can just see all those horses galloping over to your side to get you all upset and angry and hateful. Don't react. Go back to your God. Don't ignore it or suppress it, but don't react in anger. Anyone else?
I think one of the things, one of the tools that resentment uses, or the hooks, is self-justification. You know, it'll try to argue that, well, I'm justified in feeling this way about what another person may have done to me. And I think that's something that, you know, you really, or I really have had to be careful I'm not holding in my thought. You know, I guess it was a couple of months ago, I went through my thought and I realized there were three people that I was resenting for what they had done to me in the past. And I really stripped that thought bare. And the thing that really saved me was I started being grateful for all the good that they had done for me. And when I did that, I just felt such an influx of love. And it just wiped out any feeling of resentment for them. It was really wonderful.
Thank you.
That is wonderful.
It is.
That's exactly how God works.
When I looked up the definition of mercy in the Merriam-Webster Student Dictionary, it said that while mercy in English now has the meaning of kindness or pity shown to someone, the word merci in French has lost much of that meaning, and it mainly means today just thank you. But the synonyms were mercy, clemency, leniency, which means a disposition to not be harsh in one's dealings with others. That was really good.
Thank you, Wendy. I know, too, I believe I've told this story, but it was someone who had cancer. She was sent from the hospital home to die. And she put postcards around her house saying, "I will not die, but I will live and praise God," or something. It was a quote from the Bible. And then she went through her thought and thought about anyone that she might resent, and she stopped it, got over it, replaced it with love, did as Joanne did. There was any good, remembered that and let the other go. And then she thought, if there was anyone that I might have harmed or done wrong to, she either wrote notes or letters or contacted those people. And if she couldn't, then she, in her prayers, asked forgiveness of God anyway. In other words, she cleared her slate of any possible sense of wrongdoing or unforgiveness. And she continued that way, and she got up, did her daily chores every day, took care of her family, and guess what? She was healed.
She was healed.
And that was many years ago. And she was not a Christian Scientist, she was a Christian. Remember this. Don't take to your bosom or take to any part of your body, any organ of your body, and churn and brrr.
Can I add also, Mary, sure, that I think one of the things we often overlook is feeling hurt. And sometimes we think that's okay, maybe because that's not really, we're thinking that's not being directed towards someone, but it really is. When you're feeling hurt, you're accepting the actions of another as a reality, and you ultimately hurt yourself. So I think that's not one to be overlooked.
Very important. Thank you.
That's important for being unself. That's what unself is all about, is not being disturbed by what someone else says or does or what they don't say or don't do. Personality.
Thank you, Fairly.
I love what McNeil Young wrote once. If your feelings get hurt, get rid of your feelings.
Yeah, I often think of that. All of these things, they, as Fairly brought out, it's the self thought. And Joanne was talking about self-justification, getting your feelings hurt. It all is going to self, a personality, a selfhood apart from God. Now, if you're reflecting God, and someone says something hurtful, if you react to it, then it shows that self is present. But if you don't react to it, it shows what?
Reflecting God. That's...
Yes. It won't hurt. You'll say, as Mrs. Eddy has said, if there's any truth to it, great, I'll change. I appreciate any constructive criticism. If there's not a truth to it, it's like water off the duck's back. Thank you very much. Anything else you have to say? And then go on. I can always tell if I'm in the right mind by the way I can take criticism. If it barbs you, then there's something wrong.
Anybody if it doesn't else? Bar you, then you're safe.
Yeah.
And you can help that other person. If it doesn't barb you because you can see through the error. You're receptive to what God has give you to clear the situation.
And you can always tell with any kind of a criticism, if the motive behind it is love, if they really care and they want things better for you or your business, your church or whatever, you can feel it and take it well. If, however, they're out just to be nasty, you can feel that too. Or in some way bring you down, you can feel that too. And that's when you have to be careful not to react to it. You can absolutely see it for what it is, not be fooled by it, and know it's not the truth about God's man, and know it goes back on itself and destroys itself. Then you go forward.
Someone wise once made that, you know, if there's someone that's trying to get my goat, you know, trying to get me to get upset or trying to harm me in any way, rather than react, get into the mud fight. You can pity them. And you can expect that God will, God will change that picture. But pity them. Expect them. Be godlike. Rather than reacting and getting down in the mud.
Thank you, God.
So the pity... Also.
Lawrence, go ahead.
Well, it's something like the pity part is like they're really being handled, aren't they? So you kind of see through that this is not a part of them, really. So,
no.
That's what's
see, it's animal magnetism animating them. At the end of the class, I have something I'm going to read, which is about all that we've been talking about from precepts, something very important for you to remembers. It's what Gary just alluded to, the story, anyway.
I think it's also important. If you have something you want to say to somebody, and you felt that in your heart, I think it's important to pray about it first. Or maybe you go to God and say, God, please help me to speak to this person in a way that will bless that person, also bless me, in a way that this person can listen to it. Instead of rushing into it, it may have, like you may have said before, it may have good motives behind it, but if you rush into it, without praying about how you're going to present this issue to this person, it may not come out right. I mean, the person may not have the opportunity to think over it, because not everybody does have that kind of skill or that kind of training to think and to be able to dig deeper into everything. But the blessing is lost. At that moment, it doesn't bless anyone. But if you pray about it, like the Bible said, when God said, I will put my word in your mouth. And when you pray about it, even in the case of Moses, when Moses was going to go to Pharaoh, he's not a good speaker. And that was a big concern to Moses, even though his message was right. And he knew he wasn't a good speaker. And he asked God about it, and God told him, don't know about it. I have already figured it out. And God used Aaron, his cousin or brother, I don't know, I forgot how they relate to each other. But God used Aaron to speak, to be able to give his word out to the people of to Pharaoh, and it was a big blessing to the people of Israel. And if Moses has rushed into it, oh, God has spoken to me, I have got the power from God, I'm going to do it. It may not be, the outcome may not be as it is today.
Thank you, Benjamin. Pray before you speak.
Pray before you email.
Yeah.
That's a big one.
That's a big one. What was that that someone told you about the misunderstanding?
Well, that's different, yeah. There was a study done by somebody. I don't know how accurate or reliable it is, but it said that when you speak to someone face-to-face, you actually can get about 80% of what each one's saying. When you speak on the phone to someone, you lose a lot, and you only get about 50%. You actually only understand about 50% of what each one is saying. When you email back and forth, you lose just about everything. You only really understand about 20% of what people are typing, because so much is, there's no inflection, there's no, you know, looking at the eyes, that sort of thing.
And I think, you know, it's something to think about. That's why there are so many smiley faces and things like that, Seth, because people don't want them to be misunderstood, that what they're saying isn't in any way trying to be offensive. So that's why it's good, I think, as much as we can, to speak with each other, not to get so mechanical that all we do is email and call that impersonal. Nothing wrong with seeing your brother eye to eye or speaking to him voice to voice. And if we can't love our brother whom we do see, how can we love God whom we can't see? Anybody else? Go ahead.
I really like what, you know, Benjamin brought out about, you know, praying and really waiting until, you know, God tells you to do something, because I've noticed that, you know, when I don't and I start barreling ahead and doing it in my time or speaking in my time, it invariably puts up a wall of resistance from the other person. even though I could be saying something that's, you know, of value, it gets met with resistance because it's not the right time in the right way when God wanted it done.
Right. You build a resistance up in the other person. You do it. You do it. That's why to get the resistance out, down from the other person, it has to start with your thoughts. What are you thinking? How are you seeing them? How are you presenting yourself? If it's in a willful or even unintentional willful or bossy way, the walls do go up, and rightfully so. Anna? Okay, anybody else about the responsive reading? Suzanne wrote about, I will walk within my house with a perfect heart, making an important point. She wrote about it on the forum. Does anyone remember what she said, if you saw it?
Well, it was being faithful and being true in your house just as you're showing to everyone else outside your house.
Yeah.
Right, and we used to call that don't have any closed doors. Don't do anything in your house that you wouldn't be willing to do out in public on the steps of the church in front of everybody.
Yeah, it's sometimes like a tall order, but even if you strive for that, sometimes in relationships, you know, husbands and wives, and they will gossip behind doors, or they'll say mean things about people in their home, and then they get out and they're all friendly. Well, that's like a whited sepulchre. That's hypocrisy. Try to be that integrity, as Suzanne brought out, the oneness. Don't do that. Speak from love, always. Not from gossip, criticism. Or some people are just downright mean and cruel and awful in their homes. And then they go out in public and put on this big front. Very, very, that's dishonesty, and it will forfeit divine help, as Mrs. Eddy says. Very dangerous.
There was one thing in the responsive reading that that I really like, that caused me to think, and that's verse number 3. I will set no wicked thing before mine eyes. I hate the work of them that turn aside. It shall not cleave to me. That he says that we should not enter into an immoral atmosphere unless in the attempt to purify it. One thing we found is if you don't handle animal magnetism when it confronts you, or it's in your home, in your business, in your church, whatever, if you don't handle it, you don't hate the animal magnetism, it will cleave to you. It'll take you over.
That sense, in that way, the word hate has a different connotation. I remember, you know, Mrs. Evans used to be very, very strong about this. Sometimes it almost troubled me, but I do now see what she means. If you are lukewarm to an era, and you're, what if he said this, or, oh, it's not so bad, it will get into your thoughts. This idea of hate means to just not tolerate.
Hate evil.
Yes.
Hate error.
That you can. Go ahead.
It reminds me of the Bible verse. Later in the Bible talks about the roaring lion that walketh about seeking who it may devour. And it will watch, see who is going to be nice to others with the intent of getting something selfishly, wrongly, maliciously out of them. They look for that type. Don't be that type. One thing that struck me so clearly when I first came to this church years and years ago was right was right and wrong was wrong and there was nowhere in between.
It have a no tolerance for error. Otherwise, it will. It looks for a way. I was reading recently, I read it before, but it's the story of someone answering Mrs. Eddy's door, and she had greeted the person with a big smile on her face, and Mrs. Eddy said, don't do that. It's a way that error can come come in to my home. Now you have to, with dignity, you greet them with dignity, but not with this big smile. As Bruce said, Era's looking for a nice quote. That's why nice we consider the four-letter word. Looking for that nice person that it can wheedle in.
And devour.
And devour, yes. So don't be nice. Kind, strong, loving, compassionate, but with all those things, strong, alert, but with a sword in one hand and a tool in the other.
And I thought it was interesting that this verse was in the lesson on love.
Because that is real love.
If you're soft on error, that's not love. Being nice is not love. Love is principle. Love loves that which is right with God, and it hates that which is not.
That will put you in a good place. I know before I came here, I was in a gray zone because I was trying always to be so loving, and this is what it was all about. It was mush. I wouldn't speak up. I was always trying to be kind, go the extra mile, turn the other cheek. And that's what was so wonderful when I got here and met practitioner and teacher Mrs. Evans here, because she was not like that. And there was a power behind her words and what she did. She loved the truth. If it's loving the truth, you hate error, can't abide it, can't live with it, you can't cohabitate. It's obnoxious. And by doing that, you can overcome it and then destroy it, realize it's total nothingness, because it is nothing.
The reason you can do that is because it's not personal. Neither person, place, nor thing. Separate it from the person, destroy it. Help others in a way that they can't otherwise be helped.
Everyone understand this? Any questions? Well, that's great. Okay, she says they're learning to understand.
Absolutely.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
I think it's practicing it is the thing now.
Well, yes, it's a lot easier said than done. But if you are...
Oh, I just turned around.
If you are...
Sorry.
If you are working the best you know how, then each moment, and if these things are in part of you, you will. It will grow brighter and brighter into the perfect day. Now, in the lesson, it talks about being partakers of the divine nature. And then it goes through several things. Diligence, faith, virtue, knowledge, temperance, patience, godliness, brotherly kindness, charity, all of those things. And think about those qualities. Are you living them? Are you imbibing them? In Science and Health, in Citation 3, Rossetti says, simply asking that we may love God will never make us love Him. I always hoped it would. But the longing to be better and holier, expressed in daily watchfulness and in striving to assimilate more of the divine character, will mold and fashion us anew until we awake in His likeness. There was a time in my life I really worked with that. What did that mean? I had to long, this longing, yearning to be better and holier, then expressed in daily watchfulness. How much are you watching in your daily round, what you say, what you do? Are you never absent from your post? Always on guard, never ill-humored, never unready to work for God? And then are you assimilating more of the divine character? And the divine character, some of these divine character characteristics are in this. What is diligence?
It's
pardon me?
Working hard?
Yes. Working hard. Steady application. Doesn't mean doing it on Mondays and then on Fridays having a good time or whatever.
Continual.
Steady application. Pardon me?
Continual striving.
Thank you.
It's consistency.
Yes. Okay, add to, then to your, what, faith, virtue. What is virtue?
Devoted and painstaking effort to accomplish what it undertakes. Me, that meant don't give up. Keep working until you get the right result.
Thank you. We looked it up. Excellent. Okay, to virtue, knowledge. Knowledge, the right sense of it.
A clear, certain perception of that which exists or of truth and fact.
Thank you.
Yeah, you learn from your experiences.
Good. And it's intelligence, divine intelligence from God, not amassing up of human knowledge.
A knowledge of God.
Yes, an understanding of Him. Okay. Godliness. Oh, don't know. Patience, I guess. That's it. No,
temperance.
I skipped way over.
Temperance.
Sorry. Yeah. Temperance. Skipped way over. Temperance. What is temperance?
Self-control.
Patience.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Self-control.
Moderation in all things.
Not inclined to react.
Yeah. Yes. Self-control. That means controlled by God. Okay, what's the next one? Patience.
Doing things in God's time.
Thank you. Anybody else?
Steadfastness.
Okay, go ahead. Steadfastness. Okay.
Uncomplaining endurance of evils or wrongs.
Okay, no whining allowed.
Asking God, is this the right time to do this or not?
Yes, thank you. Thank you, okay. After patience comes godliness.
That's what you just said, taking on the divine nature.
Right, it's a reverence for God, a love for God, obedience to Him. And then the last.
Because once you get in the habit of waiting for God to direct you through all things, gradually learn to do that all the time. And it becomes very natural for you to be godlike in all that you do. You're honest and sincere about it.
So if you keep those qualities in thought, you can't go wrong. If you ever feel like you're getting off track, think about these. Think, are you expressing these qualities? And work to do so. The righteous prayer. Who would like any comments on our story about the... Well, Jesus saying we had to forgive
70 times seven.
Yeah, which is how many?
Well, in those days, it was meant to depict all the time, every time.
And it should be in our days, too.
Well, I looked up about the citation about delivered to the tormentors. And what I got from that was that you would mentally suffer. It wasn't really a place you were going to go. they refer to it as like a jail, but it's really suffering. And so I suffered from God. That hit me.
Thank you.
What goes around comes around.
And also, commentaries I read said that clearly he hadn't taken into his heart or his spirit the true forgiveness from God, or he would have been able to carry it on. I thought that was interesting. I survived it.
I remember reading somewhere Mrs. Eddy said that people have constraints on them. But if you remove the constraints, then oftentimes the worst of passions belch forth. So here's this man that owed 10,000 talents, and maybe he was starting to get an idea of what he should do, whatever, and he begged for mercy and whatever, and he got it. Once he got it, then what came out? Passions. So, by the learn a lesson again. The tormentors.
That's why sometimes delayed healings are a good thing. Get your instant gratification. You, if you don't learn something, you just go right back, and it can be worse than before. So this person got something wonderful, an expression of God's love, but he didn't learn from it. That was unfortunate. Learn the lessons God teaches you and be so grateful for them. If he had really been grateful, he couldn't have done that to his brother. And what did you write, Florence, on the forum about when you think of how many times you've been forgiven?
Yeah, I mean, at one time I was having a hard time forgiving someone, of course, because I was seeing them. This person did this to me. Oh my goodness, how could he do this and all that? And it really came out of the blue one night, like how many times I have been forgiven of all the, you know, the things that I used to do, used to think, used to say. And I have no choice but to forgive. No choice whatsoever but to forgive.
Thank you. Anybody else on this story? I read too, he had been forgiven $10,000 and the other guy was only $20. He still.
Man,
yeah. What was that all about?
And at the very end of the Bible, it says, above all these things, put on charity, is love, find love. And it says, which is the bond of perfectness. We have divine love in our heart. It bonds us to that perfect law of God. It governs the universe. Prospers us, it protects us, and it blesses everyone in our presence.
And I'm going to end now on Spiritual Precepts, Volume 1, 186. It's referring to 1 Corinthians 13. Most of you are familiar with that, about the charity, all that is said about charity. And this is the one about charity not being provoked. Carpenter says, if you are seeking to reflect the Spirit of God and you show any evidence that you are beginning to do it, you may know that you will be pursued by animal magnetism, much as a fox is chased by hounds. It is the serpent at the heels of the woman. You can never yield to being provoked, therefore, without being sure that through that mental state you are being handled by animal magnetism, any more than the fox can yield to sleep, unprotected, without knowing that the dog will be upon him. The story of the man traveling in Tibet comes in at this point. He was set upon by a group of malpractitioners who were called Dugpas. They tortured him merely with the purpose of arousing in him a sense of hatred for them. They intended to enter his thought, gain control over him, and force him to join their numbers, and they were using hatred as the opening wedge. But he had been warned in advance about these evil men, so he refused to hate them. While he could not bring himself to love them, he succeeded in pitying them, and that saved him. He was fortified through understanding. The whole purpose of these Dugpas was to provoke a mental state. When they perceived that they were outwitted, they stopped torturing him. When he refused to yield to hatred, they saw that their effort to gain control of his mind was unsuccessful. It is an axiom that if you are good as a Christian Scientist, you will have animal magnetism at your heels. If, when animal magnetism is at your heels where it belongs, you yield to hatred, that enables it to catch up with you because it puts you on animal magnetism's level. And hatred is a... That causes you to put you on animal magnetism's level, yes. Hatred is a thought exactly on the level with animal magnetism because it is animal magnetism. If you do not heal to hatred, that enables you to keep ahead and animal magnetism always behind, whereas a whip, it can do you good. We must make a covenant with ourselves never to yield to any suggestion that enables animal magnetism to get out of its place at our heels and catch up with us. As Mrs. Eddy has said, whom the gods would destroy, they would first make mad. So, blessed are the merciful, for they shall obtain mercy.
Hey, let's go have a great service.
Thank you. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you.